just like a how's it going? It's Rylan Walker Knight. We're back with Vinyl Is Podcast. It's the seventh episode. We saw Milk, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. We is me and Jen and Mark.
Hello.
And we saw Milk at the Castro, which seemed rather apt and beautiful.
It actually was really cool to watch all those that documentary footage of it, and it kind of does look the same. Yeah. Like, it is sort of oddly time warped, that
block. Yeah, I mean, there's still new shops and stuff, but it is definitely, like, you can sense the history. And, you know, they retouched the theater, the facade of the theater for the filming last year. And it was a beautiful San Francisco winter day. It was cold in the right way, it was overcast, and it was pretty much sold out theater. And, you know, it was the perfect audience to experience this film with, I thought. I mean, it's, you know, it's a choir being preached to, but it was still, you know, pretty great. The movie is, you know, it's got its missteps, maybe. You know, it's not maybe 100%, but I think it's, I want people to see it. I think people should see it. And, yeah, there's plenty to talk about, and because there's a lot happening, as much as it is kind of goofy in a certain... I think the main problem is it sort of loses its way a little bit into it. And then it just gets into complete hagiography and weird aestheticization things that Gus Van Sant is always kind of wrestling with and trying to wrangle in. I'm going to turn it over to Mark, because before this we were talking about how it's interesting to think about about how Gus Van Sant is openly gay, and he's making this about gay people, right? And it has to be sort of a gay movie in a way. I don't know if it has to be, but we're talking about that label of gay movie.
What a gay movie is, and what that does to a film to label it as such. I mean, we were talking about the new movie Chow, which we saw the trailer for before.
I think it was a Christmas Tale.
Yeah, it was Christmas Tale. Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Just to say that. And it's like one of the critic blurbs during the trailer is one of the best. The critic said one of the best gay movies I've seen all year. And I was thinking like, why, like, just sort of, I don't know, gay movie doesn't seem like a genre to me. It's not like one of the best horror films I've seen all year, or one of the best sci-fi films. I mean, it's like I can't really think of any films that I would just label as a gay movie. And I guess, yeah, well, you know, hot guys, right? But I mean, like, I don't know. So I mean,
it's the label kind of ghettoizes whatever culture is there in the gay cult. Like, it reduces it, basically.
And so often it's like the books or movies that seem. Or I don't know. I mean, the things that the sort of, like, when you study, like, in queer studies, the things you study are not usually. I don't know. It seems to me that often the thing you study is the things that, like, I've come across are things like Rope or other things where, like, it's sort of a latent homosexuality, or it's never ostensible. Yeah. Or, I mean, I guess in cases like Cruising, like Friedkin's Cruising, where the homosexuality is obvious, but the maker is heterosexual and sort of, like, you know, I mean, it represents a weird thing for the artist at hand. Or, I mean, like, when you're talking about, like, Proust or whatever, you know, I mean, it's never so much, like, the thing that makes it gay isn't the fact, isn't the presence of homosexuality.
It can't be, right? Because that would mean that a film with heterosexuality in it is a hetero film, you know? And like, what does it, would it be a gay movie because it's about a gay issue? You know, and then again, it's like, well, then, how would that make us look for straight movies? You know, like,
that's the whole point of that scene during his birthday party, where he says, "This isn't an issue. This is my life."
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we don't have to subscribe to that at all. Why don't we just work on something together?
But I think that's the problem, right? It's like it seems like, I mean, maybe not always, but it seems like the desire to call it a gay movie is the desire to marginalize it, you know, and say it's like, oh, well, but the interest is because it's gay issues. And so you've, but it's like, but you've really failed to see it if you do that. Mm-hmm. Because you don't. Well, again, it's like, oh, that's for like gay people. Why would I? And it's like, well, but the failure to identify that the civil rights issue in that movie is a pretty big failure, you know, to see the issue.
It's weird to think that someone could say like, oh, I don't like gay movies. Just like someone would say like, I don't like horror films. You know, it's
because it's the movie that says, oh, but it wasn't made for me.
Right.
You know, but of course it was.
Oh yeah, and that's the whole debate that you could have about this film being conventional is clearly Gus Van Sant wanted to make this movie straight. Like Nathan Lee says, it's the straightest thing in his oeuvre, and. I feel like a jerk whenever I pronounce things correctly. But, it's the straightest thing in his body of work. And the reason he wants to do that is because he wanted to release it a year and a day after the anniversary. I mean, a day after the anniversary, 30 years. And he wanted it to speak to a lot of people. He really wants to have a conversation with as many people as possible with this film. And I think that's admirable in a way. It kind of limits it, definitely.
What do you mean limits it? Why would it limit it?
I think what we were talking about with the sex scenes, like if you're going to limit yourself to, if you're making a movie about coming out and like accepting the world and like seeing the last speech about us, you know, like it's all about, it's this desire, this optimistic desire for a community of the world. And, I don't know if I really subscribe to that all the time, because I don't know if I subscribe to everybody, but it's, you know, the bleeding heart inside me likes that, I guess. I mean, I was really moved by portions of the movie. I'm not going to shy away from the fact that I cried, you know? Like, part of that might be fatigue, but I'm always tired, so whatever.
It was interesting, as we were watching it, it did sort of occur to me that there's not a lot of graphic stuff going on. Like, this is pretty tame. But it didn't bother me, and I thought it was touching. And it was very sort of willfully staged, like lots of shadow. But I don't think you have to read that as Van Sant keeping things closeted.
You don't have to, but...
Although what's interesting is that he shot more sex scenes, and then they were cut, you know? Like, I would have liked to have been in that editing room, you know, to just, you know, it's like, why were they cut, you know?
So attractive.
Yeah, the film would just immolate. It would burn down.
It would really become like a gay film.
The thing that's most frustrating to me is not necessarily that Van Sant kept Milk, like, closeted, but it's just that, like, America is so closeted that...
They're still afraid.
That it has to be, that, like, you have to think of it like that. It's just like, why... Wouldn't it just, you know?
Oh yeah, the other thing to talk about with this movie is that, number one, Prop 8, right? That is terrible. And number two, that new guy we got in the big old White House come January, pretty similar parallels there. But it is, like, it seems to be inescapable to talk about this movie without talking about our season and what it has brought.
Especially Prop 8.
Yeah, I mean, Prop 8, it just doesn't make sense to me. I'm definitely with that Keith Olbermann special note. I mean, that guy's kind of he's kind of goofy, but
Shocking, like, when...
I mean, I really appreciate what he said. But.
Yeah, but like this, you know, it's like we, you know, these, in the film, it was like, well, this is legislation of bigotry and like all that. And it's like, wow, didn't we just do that, like, this year? It's pretty amazing.
Oh yeah, I mean we didn't really have. Maybe that's probably partly why it succeeded is we didn't have a Briggs to latch on and hate with, you know, like we
or
didn't
milk to latch
or
on.
Yeah, nobody. We got like a Sam Jackson commercial a little late in the year, and that was about it.
Yeah, no spokesperson.
Yeah, I mean, and even that cool dude who's gonna take over sidestepped it. He was like, "No, but I don't really dig on gay marriage," and that was kind of disappointing. Because the Oldman's thing was it's just about, you know, loving people, just love the world a bit. How about that? How about you just don't?
Well, or just, I mean, the unconstitutionality of it, right? And like how you have to fool yourself into thinking that it's legal and consistent with the tenets of the Constitution. It was interesting how they showed the parallel between, you know, like, so Melk had his debate with, I forget the character's name, you know, like on his home turf. So what was it?
Briggs.
Briggs.
Know.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Real guy, not just a character.
Well, right. And how the things he said there were not the things he said in the Orange County debate where he was like booed and, you know, everything else.
Smart guy. Playing to me.
He, at one point, he says politics is theater, and he knows which audiences he's playing to whenever he gets in front of one, and he wields the little megaphone really well, or he knows how to sit in that chair and put his finger on his face, you know? But at the same time, like, the movie really isn't interested in theatricality. It isn't so much about that.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, no, I did too. We were talking about that briefly.
I thought the aesthetics were sort of a letdown of the film. I mean, my favorite moment was the moment that we talked about when Emil Hirsch is, when Milk is trying to recruit him, and he just says, you know, fucking elections are a bourgeois affectation. And he has this he has this cigarette in his hand, and he's got these amazing movements. And it's like, all of that, like, amazing affectation is right there.
You see his whole body. It's actually, like, it's one of the few non-close-ups. It's, there's a great fear of the full body, it seems, in a lot of cinema these days. Like, to see the full body move through space. And that's something that I think about with theatricality. No, and then you got this really stupid kind of link to the opera. At the very end,
I mean, just the whole opera scene, and then looking out to the opera houses.
Yeah, I mean that was.
It was just a little tacked on. I think it could have been.
Oh, I think they set it up. He's listening to opera throughout the movie, but it's just like that opera might have been playing then,
well,
you know. But
that,
just like
why that version of theatricality.
Yeah, I mean, the baroqueness of the opera isn't really what we're looking for with Milk's plight. He wasn't doing that at all. And Van Zandt's thing is more about painting, you know. It's about seeing things emerge. It isn't about action, you know. A lot of that in these movies that he's been making is about seeing how death will emerge from like desperate or not really desperate, but just sort of like bleak, like spaces.
You know, it's funny, my favorite moment was when Milk said, if you want real political power, you have to try, or you have to be able to speak the truth. Mm-hmm. And that kind of hit me. And like, what I loved about the film was that it was a portrayal of how you build a political movement and where it starts and what kind of character could make it successful. You know, and that, like, it was an interesting portrait of a certain kind of successful politician, right? Like a leader of a political movement. And it's, you know, he was a little bit unexpected. You know, he's not like Martin Luther. He wasn't, his oration, like, he wasn't like a great orator. He was maybe a bit more like someone like Obama, who just knows how to talk to certain kind of crowds and is good at a controlled emotional, I don't know, profile.
I dig the spirit of the movie a lot more than I maybe dig like concrete elements of the film, except for the acting. Like, everybody's good, you know, and beautiful. Like, James Franco, again, is just, if it weren't for Melville Poupeau in A Christmas Tale, you know, James Franco is definitely one of the best looking male babes around right now.
That's another interesting thing about the film that I think people talk about, and that was sort of one of my reactions, that it's just like a cast of straight men playing gay men, mm-hmm. which I don't really have anything to say good or bad about it. I mean, I guess it's kind of awesome to have straight men able to play, you know, that, like, I don't know, it's nice to see...
They're game in a really cool way, definitely. The other weird thing about it, maybe, is that Van Zandt's gaze is always kind of weird. I mean, he's been making movies about kids who are really pretty recently. Even in Jerry, you know, those guys, those aren't men. They're trying to learn how to be men in a way. It's kind of a weird movie about self-actualization and killing the part of you that brings you down. But that's still so much about, like, overcoming youth in a weird way. But, and, you know, Kurt Cobain, the Kurt Cobain-esque kind of guy. I mean, you're supposed to definitely think about Kurt Cobain in Last Days. That's not even a person, you know. That's just beyond, like, you know, he's beyond language. he doesn't participate in anything, really. It's kind of amazing. The looking, like, his, it's always kind of curious how he's looking at these people and whether or not it is just, like, lurid. Like, the kid at the center of Paranoid Park is this adorable cherub kid, and you can tell Gus Van Sant, like, likes to look at him really close up with his big eyes and his red cheeks. But I don't know much about that kind of, like, ethical posture and what we deserve, or what an artist is supposed to do about that impulse and the desire. Like, part of the reason you might want to make a movie is to be able to film pretty things. But maybe, do either of you have any ideas about that? Like, and how that might play into Milk too? We should keep on topic, maybe.
Well, I mean, the only thing I can think of really is what I said before. When I was talking to you guys on the BART station, like, how film or the cinema enables you to check your sexuality at the door, which is something I stole from a professor. But it's like, you go into a film expecting a camera and a director and images to tell you what's beautiful, kind of. I mean, things are presented as beautiful. I mean, like, I never would have really thought of Harvey Milk in this film as, like, cute, what everyone calls him is cute. But then at times you're like, he does look kind of good, and, you know, the suit and with his hair sort of awkwardly come to the side or whatever. I don't know. I mean, there's that. Like, you're enabled to look at maybe things that you wouldn't in reality see as attractive and see them as attractive.
It's framed. The framing tells you something about its desirability, right? Like, framing can actually create and affirm desire.
Every image in a film is desired as it's given to you. Like, you have to operate on the principle that everything. Yeah, that's why animation is so cool. It's you know, this is exactly what is wanted, and you're going to be directed by looking exactly at this. But.
So it is interesting that in a film where it did linger very closely on all the young men, it lingered on, yeah, like, a certain amount of nakedness. But there wasn't a lot of sex. There was a lot of there was, like, kissing and closeness, but not a lot of sex. See, and, like, you don't, maybe, I don't know, like, maybe to be affirmed as a movie with this focus, it didn't have to have a lot of sex. I'm still not really sure, like, why it would have needed it to complete its integrity. You know, like, maybe the truth of the affection and intimacy that it showed was the truth necessary for the film.
Yeah, I mean, maybe part of the reason it's so conventional is something that Scott says to him late, is like, you want to be normal more than anybody. Look at you. I mean, it's like, you wanted to be a part of the machine, basically. You wanted to upend it, but you've now, you are trying to change a lot of things for a lot of people. And your desire is to make some kind of world where we don't have to think about it, and that is, like, it's a desire for some kind of convention. Like, Dan White says, the America can't, does he say America or can't exist without the family?
Yeah.
And he says, well, we aren't against that. We keep trying. But so like, what is this desire for normalcy? And what is, I mean, that word is just so troubling. Anyways, I mean, what does she say in that terrible video? But Anita Bryant, she says the normal right.
Oh, yeah. No, but that's like the bullshit of the movement against like gay marriage and all that. It's like, you know, this idea that it's a threat to the family. Because, and I am building something here. You know, it's like if you were really concerned about marriage and its central place in the fabric of society, why don't you care about divorce or adultery? You know, so I mean, like, it's just so transparent. Yeah, you know, it's like they, but no, gay marriage, that's what's going to destroy the family. You know, like, it's just, so, okay, so the way that the film portrayed White's anxiety, I thought was interesting. Like, there was sort of the suggestion that, like, he was the closeted version of Melk years ago. But his real problem with Melk was that he had this like issue and this like political agenda that was giving him, that was accounting for his momentum. And so it's like the White character, he was like, I can't exploit anything like that. And he was like frustrated. I just thought that was interesting that his real frustration, and I guess maybe compounded maybe by the fact that he himself was closeted, who knows.
But yeah, remember, that's kind of boring and irrelevant.
Yeah, whatever. But so they did something more interesting. Like they had, remember the scene where he shows up drunk at that event? And like what you get from that scene is that he's frustrated at Melk's political power and like doesn't know how to contend with it.
It's also about Melk and Sean Penn specifically, his charisma. I mean, as much as it's a movie about Melk, it's definitely a movie about Sean Penn. As any film starring a film star is about that film star and how this is going to add to it, this film star's legacy or persona as a film star. And what Glenn Kenny says in his thing is he's the most joyous character he's played since Jeff Spicoli, which is true. Like, Sean Penn is just so mopey so much of the time. It gets annoying. So it's great to see him as this. And that plays into, like, Dan White is like, I can't compete. And, you know, Josh Brolin will never compete, probably. I mean, he's on a roll right now. But, you know, like, it's so much about charisma as much as it is an issue. I mean, it isn't about an issue. That's what he said. That's what the scene's about to me. Is he's like, this is my life. Don't abstract it. This is about this. That's what I said earlier. Yeah, it's like that. I love that word. You know, this. He says, I don't want to miss this, and that's one of the loveliest things you can say to somebody you love that you can't have. but I don't know if that ties into anything else we were talking about at all. Other than charisma, and the movie glides on Sean Penn's charisma the way. I mean, I think he's in every scene, right? He's practically in every scene.
Except for there are a few shots just of Dan White before the murder. But
that shot where he's like, in his underwear, looking out the window, was really weird.
Yeah, I mean, I liked that it didn't subscribe to some like, oh, he was closeted, and so he couldn't deal with that. I mean, it was
that scene like. That was in the place where conventionally you would be shown some sort of reason why he was doing it. But it wasn't. It was just this like weird naked baby scene.
Yeah. It almost gets at something like Elephant. But I mean, that's one of Elephant's downfalls, is that it gives some weird motivation through like Hitler. And I don't know, that whole sequence outside of the school. Like, that movie shouldn't have been anywhere but inside the school, you know? I like that it was more just about the fact that this guy is just unfit to be in this system. He just isn't fit to be a part of this, and he doesn't understand why. And it doesn't want to explain it as some manifestation of closeted fear and...
I think it does tie into masculinity a little bit. I mean, he feels like he can't take care of his family, and he can't be this man that he sees Milk as being, as Milk has this family kind of in the Castro, who he is, you know, he's the patriarch there, as weird as that word is to use. But, you know, which he can't be for his own family. He can't even afford to take care of him. And so, I mean, that's another part of the frustration, which doesn't have to do necessarily with him being closeted, like you say. It's just, I mean, that just a general sense of inadequacy.
Yeah. He says he's just uneducated, and it really is just a story of ignorance, really. And that's the great intolerance. Like, I recently wrote something about White Dog, and that movie is just all about, you know, look at the world some, and just take a look, and, you know, don't look, you know, look generously. But this Milk isn't really about looking at all, and it isn't really about images even. That's why I wanted it to be more about theatricality, because then it would be about presentation. But it is just about, it's more, and it's weird, because that would mean it would be about action too, and it's about activism. But it is, all that really is just like, you know, boards on a wall, and speeches. And those speeches are good, you know, like that was one of the moments I got kind of carried away with myself, was that speech when he, on the Gay Freedom Day parade. But I don't know, and a lot of it, oh no, that wasn't that. I can't remember which speech it is, but there's, my favorite shot in the whole movie is that close up from like the crowd's perspective on Milk, and it's out of focus for like 10 seconds and trying to find focus, and then it finally does, because it's like this little doodle of affect. It's just pure expression of like the weird giddy high of being amongst a lot of people feeling a certain way about what is being said. Like, he tells Cleve, Emil Hirsch, like, you can't use cue cards, you just got to get up there and yell at them what they're feeling. And that's what that shot did really well, I thought. But I really wanted to get that out, and I know you had something.
Oh, I lost it.
Okay. Sorry. But yeah, I mean, it's a... Yeah.
In many ways. But I mean, it's hard to... I can't really be angry with it.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's hard not to feel like, you know, happy with what it says, I guess. I mean, even though it's maybe not be amazingly interesting for cinema at large, but, you know, it's...
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the way less interesting of the movies he's made this year. I think Paranoid Park is just, like, music. It's just, like, delicious.
Interesting what you do, though, when you want to make a movie that you feel is politically necessary. And, yeah, and it's like you don't... Therefore, you make it, you make that the forefront, and you don't, like you were saying, it's like, even though Gus Van Sant is perfectly capable of making irreverent kind of cinema, this is not, you know.
Yeah, he decided to, I mean, it's easy to think that he's just like, I guess it's easy to think this, that he's looking for awards or something, but I don't really think that at all.
I remember what I was going to say, because you said about looking, but we do need to be... I mean, looking is not just natural and immediate. You do have to be taught how to look sometimes, and that's what film can do, for better or for worse.
Oh, yeah, any film teaches you how to look, but this one isn't really interested. Any film can teach you how to look. I don't know if you could hear that, but this one isn't really interested in some kind of
lesson. There was maybe little glimpses of, like, I'm going to show you how to look at these two men, you know, like, who are partners and who have these, like, little moments. And, yeah, like that, I felt slightly educated.
But I think I learned more about looking at men and my own whatever latent homoeroticism from Beau Travail, like that movie. Like, I'm not gay, but that is one of the, like, it's pretty sexy just to look at those bodies moving that way. I mean, there's a lot of other things going on in that movie. That's a masterpiece. But, it just isn't about looking as much, and that's what movies...
Oh, yeah, no, that's, yeah, perfectly fair. Just a little bit of looking.
Yeah,
the,
I mean...
The subway scene, right? The opening?
That was good. That's something he's been doing. Like, the framing is really nice there, where as soon as they develop a certain amount of intimacy, the camera is allowed to drift right and accept Steve or Scott into the frame a bit more. And that's pretty good. It's similar to a certain way about how the camera occludes the cop in the interview section of Paranoid Park, slowly. And that's really a nice moment.
A lot of it's about looking.
Yeah. Sort
of the looking back to that time, you know, and it's fun. It's, I mean, it's amazing to look back at San Francisco then, and especially to live in it now. I mean, it's, I don't know. It's pretty wonderful. I think, I mean, like, San Francisco at that time seemed way more exciting than it is now.
Exactly the same.
I mean, the buildings might be the same and stuff, but I mean, just like the vibe would be amazing. I remember.
It also sounded scary too. Like, all that stuff about having, like, if you were gay, you knew you had to have a whistle. Like, that is terrifying to me. But that is one of the other.
A lot of women feel that way.
Yeah, no, that's true. And yeah, a lot of the gay issue stuff denies talk about simply gender. Like, I like the inclusion of, I mean, it's awesome that she's a real person. What was her name? Anne? They hired a lesbian to help. And that's awesome. There aren't enough lesbians around, you know, in movies in any kind of like cool, thoughtful way, you know, like Bound is just like some weird fantasy. That's kind of a dumb movie, as fun as it is. But also race, like that's something The Wire does really well, is it just casts a lot of amazing black people and gives them a lot of face. The document of San Francisco at that time, that is the other delicious part about this movie, is all the archival footage of seeing this, that that place got crowded, you know, like it's rare that I find San Francisco crowded now. Like, it was crowded outside that theater because there were 800 people there, and that was awesome. But we had to go and stuff, and we couldn't really enjoy that. And we weren't out in this. We were in Oakland at Mark's apartment on the election night, but my friend was in the Mission, and he said that they shut down 16th Street, and there were people dancing on buses, and that sounds beautiful. I wish I was there. But, San Francisco, it seemed like all those street scenes in the Castro, it seemed like that was actually like a cool place to be. I don't know if I would have felt all that comfortable, but it looks awesome and inviting. So
I think it looked a lot that way on the night of the election and on many Halloweens.
Halloween terrifies me though. So
like you can get a crowd into the Castro.
Yeah, but yeah. Halloween is terrifying. Halloween isn't about community at all. It's about some weird, lustful, I don't know, I'm not into that. Yeah, it's the terrible side of Dionysus, you know? Like, just like the thoughtless stupidity of just like, I'm gonna expose something that I don't normally want to expose, when you should just be whoever the fuck you want to be, and that's definitely what the movie's about, right?
And just, also, to want to we're getting on a tangent, but to want to expose that because you're, you know, quote unquote, allowed to on this day, because, you know, society enables you to do it one day a year so that you don't do it the rest of the year. Be bad now so that for the rest of the year you go to work 5 days a week and don't do shit and don't start riots.
Like, and what do a lot of girls, like, reveal a lot of skin, and what a lot of boys, like, now I've seen a lot of boys reveal a lot of skin and try and be subversive that way, but if you really want to, like, wear some shorts. You don't have to wear pants if you don't want to, if it's sunny out.
A more explicit sexual invite is a costume, you know, like I'm gonna...
Everything is costumes.
And I love the scene where the Emil Hirsch character comes to City Hall in a suit, and like Melk tells him, no. Like, you need to wear the tight jeans and the tightest shirt you have when you come here. He does that little, like, dance up the step. That was beautiful, because I thought, wow, okay, so what we need to know about this guy was that, he had this, that's what he called his, like, he, welcome to my stage, my theater. How do you like my new theater? That's how he greets him. Yeah. That we were going to get this weird perspective, this great, interesting perspective he had on City Hall, and that he retained something that let him be successful there, and it would have something to do with theatrics. It wasn't really explained, I guess.
No, I mean, but I don't think it's a subtle move either. Like, it's something like subtly thrown in. I think it just is kind of there's a lot of like hints at something that could have been great. I think, And it just has this beautiful, generous performance at the center of it, you know. So maybe that's just a lesson that we can glean, is to, you know, dress how you want to dress and just be somebody. Just try to...
Well, but Milk, I mean, he changed too, right? He was yeah. I'm going to put on the suit and cut my hair and no more pot and bathhouses.
That shift...
other people, he wanted, like, the Emile Hirsch... Sorry, just like, he wanted the Emile Hirsch character to keep his jeans and his t-shirt, yeah. You know?
He knew that for him to succeed at all, like, he has to subscribe to a few things. Like, you know, capitalism sucks, but I gotta go file some stuff tomorrow, you know? Like, I'm gonna have to do that so I can do other things I want to do. Like, he was willing to let some of his soul dress up in the suit, and he looks fine, you know?
He looks good.
Yeah, he found a way to enjoy it. But... You know, sexy little Cleve can just wear his sexy little jeans and, you know, just be in the world and act in it and live in it and don't apologize. I think that's the other thing. So, how about that?
You wanna leave? How about
that? Okay.
When I hear that robin sing, well, I know it's coming on spring. Ooh-wee. And we're starting a new life. I've been shoveling the snow away, working hard for my pay. All I gotta say is we're starting a new life. We gonna move way on down the line. Girl, we'll be standing one place too long a time. When I hear that robin song, well, I know it won't be long. Find out where we belong. Yeah, we're starting a new life. Standing in one place for too long a time. And when I hear that robin song, well, I know it won't be long. Find out where we belong. And we're starting a new life. And we're starting a new life. And we're starting a new life. And we're starting a new life.